Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the completely redesigned 300-horsepower MDX. More information is available at Acura.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The bloodletting in the American newspaper industry just gets deeper. On your doorstep, if you still get one, you may have noticed your newspaper getting skinny as ads and readers fly to the web. But newsroom staffs around the country are getting skinny too. So are circulation numbers and revenues. Some days the future itself seems to be vanishing for newspapers, and quickly. Layoffs, less news, classified ads gone to the internet, readership plummeting, old publishing companies bailing out, great names in news unloaded at fire sale prices. Newspaper defenders say Wall Street is killing the business. Newspaper readers wonder who will gather the news. Up next on Point, newspapers in big trouble and the future of the news. Joining me first today to look at the newspaper industry's woes is Sarah Ellison, media reporter for The Wall Street Journal. She joins us from New York. Sarah, thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Give us the latest on the Tribune Company and why people are watching this one so closely.
Well, I think that what happened to Tribune is it was once a very respected newspaper company, very well run. It owns the LA Times, the Chicago Tribune, and one of their biggest shareholders, the Chandler family, raised a huge ruckus earlier this summer and demanded that they put themselves up for sale, essentially. And they've done that, and one of the things that's been most disturbing about this auction process is that there hasn't been a huge clamoring of interest in the entire company. So it sort of leaves everyone wondering what the future of the newspaper industry is if one of the best newspaper companies can't get offers.
And this was supposed to be a company that got it, that was forging ahead with the new internet age. What about the tremors this has sent through the newspaper business elsewhere around the country, Sarah? Are you seeing evidence of newspaper publishers saying, oh, good Lord, what now?
Well, I think that what's happening is there have been a series of things that have gone on. First, there was the sale of Knight Ridder to McClatchy. Now there's the Tribune auction. There's also a situation in Philadelphia, which is a follow-on from the sale of Knight Ridder, where a local group of investors have bought the Philadelphia paper and have had to make a lot of cuts there. I think all of these things add up to a general sense of sort of collective panic in the industry.
Scripps, with all of its newspapers, looking to maybe get out of the newspaper business, go to cable television, other papers being sold for half of what they were bought for not that many years ago. How do we assess, just in business terms, before we even get to the news gathering part of this, of course, they're related, but how do people assess the future of this business? Is it a sustainable business in anything like the size and predominance that it has so long had in American culture?
Well, I think the question is, can the newspaper industry survive in a structure where there are public companies that are traded on the stock market? So you clearly have a situation where investors are sort of the barbarians at the gate. They aren't happy anymore with the kinds of future returns that newspaper companies are promising. You remember that the stock market is essentially a bet on the future.
Mm-hmm.
And even while newspaper companies are very profitable today, with the internet and other emerging technologies, everyone getting news on iPods and cell phones, it's very unclear what's going to happen to the industry going forward. So you'll still have journalism existing in some form and delivered in some form, but whether or not people are going to be willing to bet and support newspapers in a traditional stock market structure is really the question.
And because so many papers are in that structure, that's what papers are dealing with. Are we going to see newsroom cuts? Are we going to see the volume and quality of news that we're accustomed to with this pressure from Wall Street, sir?
Well, I have to believe that the quality of news will survive in one form or another. If you, one of your later guests this morning is someone who just started Politico, a new website, which is a big political website that that is something that is going to definitely keep newspaper quality journalism alive. So I would have to say that that will still survive no matter what.
And what about a rush for the exits here? People are already selling papers for less than they bought them for, a lot less, not long ago. Are we likely to see a lot more of these sales, or papers trying to go private, to get away from the Wall Street expectations that have been so hard for them to handle?
Well, I think that going private seems like it's an appealing option because you don't have to deal with the harsh glare of the stock market. But that is also, it's a problem because you have private equity firms that are only willing to pay a certain amount in order to take over a newspaper. What's happened with Tribune is that Tribune is willing to go private, but there are no private equity firms that are showing up with a bid that is even where the company is trading at today. For something like the Boston Globe, which has local investors who are interested in buying that paper from the New York Times.
Most famously, Jack Welch, the former
head
of General Electric. Yeah.
Exactly. That's a whole different question.
But the Tribune also, with private rich buyers like Broad and Burkle, why are these rich guys interested in an industry in so much trouble?
Well, it's a little bit like the new sports team. I think if you have a certain amount of money and you enjoy the prestige that newspapers still enjoy, then you can afford to buy the paper, have a very powerful position in your local community. And I think sometimes people, you know, businessmen like Jack Welch, see this as a business challenge, as a puzzle that they want to try and figure out. So I think it's appealing in those terms. The question is that people are asking in the journalism world, is that the best option? Is that the best way forward?
And can Wall Street walk away from this business without wrecking it in the process as the internet and everything else comes on? Sarah Ellison in New York, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
We're looking today at the fate of newspapers and the future of news. I'm joined now from Washington by Bill Kovich, former editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, former Washington bureau chief of the New York Times. He's founding chairman of the Committee of Concerned Journalists and a senior counsel at the Project for Excellence in Journalism, co-author of The Elements of Journalism and Warp Speed, America in the Age of the Mixed Media Culture, and an old friend. Bill Kovich, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hey, Tom. It's nice to be with you.
Bill, help us get a handle on this. We look at the papers in our hands in the mornings. They look awfully skimpy sometimes. The Wall Street Journal itself shrunk recently, 10% of its news hole gone. We look at these headlines of sale and, you know, people practically jumping out windows to get away from newspapers around the country. Is this it? Is this the fat lady singing, Bill? What does all the woe mean?
I think the fat lady may be tuning up, Tom. I'm not sure she's ready to sing yet, but we're going through a very confusing period. I agree with virtually everything Sarah said, except I do have serious concern about whether or not quality journalism can survive in this interim period while we figure it out. And I say interim period because if you look at the circulation numbers, we see the circulation numbers of print-on-paper newspapers going down.
And fast.
But the readership on their websites, which is also readership, it's just not print-on-paper, it's bits on the Internet, is going up. So overall, the print product, the major newspapers, are not losing that many readers, if any. Maybe even gaining readership on the Internet sufficient to offset the loss of readership print on paper. The difference is the economics of the two. Each reader that drops the newspaper and goes to the Internet takes with them about 75% of the economic underwriting that they get.
It just goes away. It vanishes because the advertising's not there. Yeah.
Exactly. And the key to survival is going to be to hold on to that core, hard core and large core of professional journalists who provide the content, whether or not we can make through this transition period without so stripping the newsroom of talent that what appears on the web is a mere shadow of itself. And if that happens, the basic program of information, daily information that democracy depends on for its survival, I think democracy's in jeopardy.
Bill, isn't that stripping at some significant degree well underway already? I mean, I look down the headlines and layoffs here, layoffs there, layoffs there. Time, Inc., big layoffs recently, not newspapers, but Ink on Paper News. I mean, hasn't that already begun in a very significant way?
Oh, it has. It's in a significant way, and I dare say there's not a newspaper reader in America that has not looked at the paper and seen some indication of that. If it's not in the number of mistakes that are made, it's in the number of beats that seem to be diminishing in the amount of information they provide to the daily report. It has happened. There's no question about that. But there is still a strong enough core of journalists involved in the process, either on the internet side or the print side, to maintain the kind of flow of information we need at this point. How much further we can cut, how much more information can disappear and be filled by information provided by vested interest, whether it's a political vested interest, mm-hmm. a social vested interest, or an economic vested interest that provides information designed to tell you what to think rather than to help you think. That's where we're running into the problem.
And Bill, the intake valve here, as new graduates, let's say, from college, look at what they're going to do with their lives, they might have thought about journalism, are they going to continue to go into this very important work for, as you say, democracy?
It's amazing how those numbers hold up. They are going in. They are convinced that there is a future out there. We're the Committee of Concerned Journalists that I'm still associated with has a relationship with the University of Missouri. And the journalism school there is full of some of the brightest students I've ever seen. Our former relationship with the University of Columbia Journalism School, the school is full. Boston University, the school is full. And they're very bright people who are committed to the notion of a journalism of public service.
We've been joined from Washington by Bill Kovich. He was editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, was Washington Bureau Chief for the New York Times, founding chairman of the Committee of Concerned Journalists. We're joined right now as well from St. Petersburg, Florida, by Ellen Soderberg. She was editor at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch from January 01 to November 05. She's former managing editor of the South Florida Sun-Sentinel. She's currently a visiting faculty member at the Poynter Institute. Ellen Soderberg, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
So we're just trying to get a handle on what's going on. Most people see this at the end of the line. If they still subscribe at all, they see papers getting skinnier, fewer ads, less news. How steep a downward spiral are we on here, Ellen?
Well, I think the problem is the lack of long-term strategic investment and planning by the newspaper companies. And by the way, television news, particularly at the local level, is going through a lot of the same issues as well. I've been saying for many, many years, when people would offer the doom and gloom prognostications about the newspaper business, that if newspapers ceased to exist in my lifetime, it wouldn't be because they were killed off by their media, but because they committed suicide. And I used to say that as a stirring vote of confidence for the survival of newspapers. I fear now it might be a true statement. As Sarah
what do you
noted,
mean by suicide? Suicidal how?
Because all they concentrate is the short term, the quarterly reports to Wall Street. While we're losing at major sources of advertising, they're still insisting that the targets for profits aim toward the 30% and up margins. Almost no other business aims for those kinds of margins. The Chicago Tribune's been estimated by Merrill Lynch to have ended 2006 with a profit margin of 26.5%. Meanwhile, they're cutting all over the place. That's not exactly a long-term strategic planning or investment. And that's what I mean. They're driving away readers. What other business would think that you could maintain readers, grow readership by every year cutting back what you offer to your customers?
Bill Kovich, this suicide by Wall Street, it's hard for people to understand, I think. Expecting margins on this 20% plus, 30%, historically sometimes there were 40%. Why does Wall Street want more out of the newspaper as a business than out of, supermarket chains? And if it's not there, why let it die rather than cut back on those expectations and keep the paper healthy?
Well, Tom, I think that the newspaper industry did it to itself back in the 1960s and 70s when they began arguing to the market that they could demonstrate maintaining a quarterly profit margin of some substantial number.
To pump up the value of their holdings, of their papers.
Pump up the value of their holdings and to acquire more. The Gannett news chain developed that strategy very effectively back in the 70s, and the market began to expect the same kind of behavior from every news organization. The New York Times has never played that game of trying to maximize profit at the expense of the newsroom, but every time they invest revenue in their news operation, the market punishes them because they anticipate that that investment is going to hurt the quarterly return and don't think about the long-range return.
Is there some way out of that, or is that just baked in the cake now and the ship will go down on that dynamic if necessary?
Well, a lot of it right now, I think, at the Tribune Company and elsewhere, is a panic reaction to what's going on. And rather than, as Ellen just said, rather than talk about, plan for, demonstrate to the market analyst what their long-term strategy is and develop a long-term strategy where the analyst can see the potential for growth over time, that the investment now will pay off later, that will attract investment by the kinds of investors that look for long-term returns, like pension funds. They're looking for long-term growth, and the press, if they can show those returns, can regain some faith from at least part of the market, I believe.
But Ellen, the press at the ownership level is already Wall Street on many, many fronts. So you know, when we talk about them decoupling from this dynamic, well, they kind of are the dynamic, the owners on Wall Street. What's the downside risk here? Bill Kovich says if papers can just hang on, or news gathering organizations can hang on through an interim while the economics of the web emerge, we'll be okay. Is there a downside risk of us losing something substantial in that what's turning out to be a pretty long interim?
Absolutely. And well, I totally share Bill's concerns about whether quality journalism will survive, particularly in the metro markets. I think the metro papers are the most threatened by these dynamics, because we have to acknowledge that all of their traditional major legs of revenue are wobbly too. The retail consolidations, Macy's buying up practically every department store in the country, has cost newspapers many millions of dollars. All of the classified categories, help wanted, auto dealers, realtors, are seeing a lot of their revenue migrating to the web too. So the traditional supports for the metro papers are all very shaky, and that's a real issue. But the bigger issue long term is I don't have yet to see a model where the online revenues can come anywhere near replacing the type of lucrative revenues that ink on paper products traditionally draw. That's what I mean, where you really have to see the long term strategizing and investment, because right now it's a very small fraction. The online revenue makes a very small fraction of what you get in the print product.
And we see that showing up in the print product as it shrinks, and you wonder what's going on here. Ellen, Bill Kovich, please stand by. I want to begin to invite our listeners in. Ron is calling from Walpole, Massachusetts. Hi, Ron. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
We're well. What do you know, Ron?
I have a problem. I agree with what your guests have been talking about, but I subscribe to three papers and have for about 30 years, the Boston Globe, the Wall Street Journal, and a local paper here in the Boston area.
So you've got the full spectrum, a national paper, a local, a regional paper, and a local paper.
Yeah, correct. And I'm in the process of deciding whether to get rid of one, two, or all three of them.
Why?
The news content has gone down. Well, in the case of the local paper, they don't even cover my town recently. That's been the last 3 months. In the case of the Wall Street Journal, I don't know what they're doing. It's more like a monthly magazine now.
They redesigned recently, got a lot skinnier, lost 10% of their news hole, the space for news in the paper.
Right. And if you know, I think a lot of these papers have forgotten what the product is. The product is not making 30% profits to satisfy Wall Street. the product is providing something of news value to the people that buy the newspaper.
But of course, Ron, the ones in trouble are not making anything like that right now. The Globe had some real revenue problems lately. If you should drop one or two or three, what would you do? Where would you go for news?
I hate to say it, but probably Fox Television or the nightly news, as long as that lasts, you know, if you're trying to keep up in a world that's changing very quickly, I find it a little bit questionable to keep buying these daily newspapers that are cutting the news content.
But will you get the depth from that broadcast news that you want, that you're accustomed to?
Well, I'm counting on you, Tom, very heavily.
Oh, the burden is heavy. Ron, thanks for your call. I want to bring one more voice in here, if I may. From Washington, D.C., we're joined right now by John Harris, 21-year veteran of The Washington Post, where he was most recently national political editor. He has left the world of paper and ink. He's now editor-in-chief of The Politico. It's an ambitious political journalism venture that goes live today. John Harris, thank you for joining us.
Hello.
Why did you leave hard paper newspapers, John?
I was intrigued and felt that somebody in my generation, I'm 43 years old and have been in journalism since I was 21,
yeah.
That it has to be involved in this conversation about what's next in terms of quality journalism, as you folks have been talking about, but also what is the right model to sustain that journalism from a financial point of view. We're not going to be just all turned into nonprofit foundations or charities. That might be a model that some will follow, but I just don't think it's a promising model over the long term, that good journalism has got to be supported by a robust economic model. This question fascinated me, and I decided that I could be more immersed in that question of what's new starting something new rather than staying at a big institution like the Post. It's a place I love, and it's a did not feel that I was leaving the Post so much as moving toward an opportunity to start something from scratch.
So you're jumping on a real hot new thing. The Politico's got big investment money behind it. It's hiring a lot of people, but it's not the same kind of product that the traditional daily newspaper was. You're entirely focused on politics. Is this the future, John? We're going to slice out subject focus for every different online publication, and so
guesses, and this is all a bet, and of course we don't know, and the future is imponderable at a new place like the Politico and Politico.com or an established place like the Washington Post. My guess is that the future is more sustainable for publications that have a narrow, specialized focus. Increasingly these days, people edit their own newspapers by using Google and aggregators and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
They find specific reporters that they like. They find places that they go where they feel like they can reliably find satisfying information about specific subjects. It involves a lot of hopping around. And in that environment, I do think that this is going to encourage specialization, specialized publications aiming for an audience that has specialized interests rather than the big sort of mass market general interest metropolitan daily papers.
Bill Kovich, let me ask you, here's the Politico rolling out a lot of big-time talent, including John Harris right here, a lot of ballyhoo around it in Washington at least. Is this the future of news gathering, Bill? Is this the salvation you're looking for? Or is this you know tearing off pieces of what newspapers have done historically, slotting everything in silos, a diminishment?
You know, I think that is one part of the future and a very important one. And I think John has done us all a service, someone with his background, experience, and talent, moving into this world to try to carry the values that he's demonstrated at the Washington Post onto an internet operation. And I think what John said about the future, the internet is conditioning all people to become their own editors and publishers, and that is the hope of mainstream journalism. If the mainstream news organizations can reorganize their newsrooms to think of themselves as the organization that helps educate the public on how to become their own editors and publishers, and where to go to get the information they need in order that they can depend upon in order to make their decisions. And then the traditional newspaper can maintain itself as the aggregator of the best information that's out there and connect people to a world beyond themselves.
But isn't Google already way ahead of traditional newspapers on that role, Bill?
Just as Google and a lot of other Internet things are ahead of mainstream news organizations because no one saw the future clearly enough. But there's no reason, because Google was there first, that the New York Times cannot become the best aggregator on the face of the earth of quality information you can trust. Google gives you information. An algorithm says everybody's looking at most. That does not validate it. It does not guarantee that it's information you can rely on.
John Harris, how many online readers do you have to get to make this a successful operation, the Politico.com?
I should emphasize something that although we are organized around an Internet presence, we also have a print edition, and that's important. We believe that it will take a while to have an economically sustainable Internet operation at the levels of quality and investment that we're talking about. We've got a print edition that circulates in Washington for about 25,000 papers that is largely going to sustain this. We've got a captive audience here of people who are interested in politics and advertisers that want to reach those people. So we see us having essentially a bridge, and I'm less focused on the particular platform, whether it's on the web or in paper. I think over time we're expecting to have a TV show that will circulate that will air here in Washington, then building a brand and a journalistic sensibility that carries across all those platforms. I just think the platform doesn't matter as much as the content and the editorial judgment behind the content.
So there's the new world as long as the money lasts, and we hope it does very well. John Harris with The Politico, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure, appreciate it. Thank you.
Let me get a call from Frank in Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, my question for y'all is the circulation for these large newspapers declining because readers are feeling they're becoming increasingly political? And let me give you an example of that. I have a great friend of mine who lives in the district in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And we're talking about this, and he says he won't read the Times anymore.
Which Times? The New York or Washington?
The Washington Times,
yeah.
Sorry. Because of this whole piece they had about Barack Obama and how he went to a madrasa. And on the other side, I hear some of my conservative friends say, you know, they won't read the New York Times because they feel it's too liberal. So do you think, or you guess, think this is what's causing the circulation of these largest newspapers to decline?
Frank, our time is short before the break. Thanks for your call, Ellen Soderbergh. A more political attitude pushing circulation down or maybe a savior long term? It's the way the UK does it. They've got papers that are working.
Right. I think in part that perception is driven by the fact that in most markets, people don't have a choice of newspapers. In St. Louis, for example, we used to have the Post-Dispatch with a liberal editorial page and a Globe Democrat with a very conservative one. And people could make their pick and be very happy about it. When people don't have choices, when only one thing is forced upon them, it makes them very unhappy. If you only had a choice of one shirt to buy in a store, even if it was a gorgeous shirt, you wouldn't be happy about that, not having a choice. And so I think that's fed a lot of the perceptions of that these politics are being forced down my throat because I don't have a choice of what I want to get. And interest in politics in general is declining. It's not coincidental that readership declines have accompanied voter participation declines. Historically, civic participation is linked very highly with newspaper readership.
Mm. We're joined right now from New York by Zachary Carabel. He's a portfolio manager and chief economist at the investment firm Fred Alger Management. Zachary Carabel, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
We're hearing Wall Street really beaten up this hour as the bad guy in this story, demanding those 20 and 30% returns from the newspaper business and killing it in the process. Is that how you see it?
Well, that's not how I see it. And I speak also as somebody who was a journalist and has been a writer in addition to someone who's on Wall Street. So yeah, I certainly understand the perspective. I just don't agree with it.
Well, but there are the numbers. You know Wall Street's expectations. They have traditionally wanted even 30% plus return on their newspaper investment, still 20% plus. You've heard, I know newspaper people say, look, just ask us for 15% or 12%. We can have great newspapers. You can have an excellent return, and there'll be peace in the kingdom. Why not?
Well, first of all, Wall Street's not a monolithic entity. So while there may be some people on Wall Street who are, in a very simplistic fashion, demanding that, there are also a lot of people who are basically demanding that the sense that the people running a business have a vision for the future that is not only sustainable, but that's growing. And while it is true that very few investors reward, just off the cuff, stable but ungrowing businesses, there are people who will buy a business that just generates cash flow. They just don't tend to be people who trade in the public equity markets, right? There are people who bring things private, but
right.
They generate good cash, which is why you have a few people now, for reasons of both vanity and finance, thinking of buying the LA Times, because it does generate money. It just may not generate the return that some people expect.
But there may not be enough billionaires out there for all these newspapers, and Americans need news.
But what Wall Street does expect and reward is people have a vision for the future of their industry. And for all the cost-cutting Tribune and these other companies have done, it's not as if their stock price has been rewarded. And it hasn't been rewarded not because the earnings are, 12% instead of 14%. It hasn't been rewarded because, unlike a company like Google, they don't seem to have a sense of the future viability of their business.
Stuck in the past and paying. Let me take a call from Daniel in Somerville, Massachusetts. Daniel, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
I think I go along with the suicide talk of a few minutes ago. I think there's a tremendous naivete among the news industry, the newspaper industry. First of all, with the Internet, they put almost their entire content online to try to keep up with the Internet before a profit system was fully integrated or even figured out. And a lot of people just dropped their subscriptions at that point. Then they decided, okay, to get that 30% margin with Wall Street, they have to attract all the young readers who have fled or never were there in the first place. So they've not only cut back the reporters, but had this content that was completely youth-oriented. Now, I'm a freelance writer. I write about music and the arts. I've been cut a great deal over the last 4 years, and the emphasis is always on the young, on celebrity, on young Hollywood, on hip-hop.
But Daniel, what's the naive here? Could they stay off the web and just make a newspaper for older readers and have any future? Then your readership is, headed for the great beyond.
That is true, but if they were not on the web and serving the readers that they solidly had in the first place well, then there'd be something out there totally different from the web that people would naturally become attracted to eventually. And I do think that Wall Street also has no great love of newspapers as the government watchdog and their kind of ultimate role as the counterculture in a way. And so they didn't have a reason to say, we adore newspapers, we're going to keep them around forever.
Just as happy to see them go, maybe. Daniel, thanks for calling. Ellen Soderbergh, what about it? Could papers have hunkered down, done a quality paper product, and survived everything that the web means?
I don't think we had much choice but to go on the web. It was certainly a devil's bargain. But when you talk about a brand meaning something, and in fact, newspapers' websites in any market that I know of are the leading websites for news, for local news in their market. So they clearly continue to have a strong brand and to build it with wider audiences. But it clearly was a devil's bargain and has cost us print readership.
A devil's bargain, Zachary Carabell, what do you want? What's the profile that would bring Wall Street back and say, you go, guys, keep strong newsrooms, fully staffed, great news, and we like the financial future of your organization?
Yeah, I mean, on the pure merits of content, Wall Street is either amorally immoral or it's just amoral in that it doesn't really care about the content that's being produced. It cares about, yes, the financials, but it cares about the financials having a future. Again, it's really important to remember that it's not the failure of newspapers to produce margins. It's the perception, rightly or wrongly, that people who run newspapers have failed to produce a coherent vision for what's going to capture eyeballs into the future.
So do you know what that is, or is that a complete mystery?
No, I mean, again, I go back to the Google analogy, or Yahoo for that matter, which have clearly been able to capture people's attention and eyeballs and then have drawn advertisers with it. I mean, newspaper was always an advertising industry.
But they're not in the news business, really, Google. They just aggregate what others do. What about the people who actually do the work of gathering the news? Is that ever going to be really appealing to the investor?
That in and of itself will not be appealing, but that's not limited to the news. That's just a generic reality of Wall Street, which is, you know, Wall Street's not that focused on the specifics of what companies do for good or for ill, any more than, you know, whether you make a good computer chip or a bad computer chip is less important than whether you can sell a lot of computer chips.
So we've got a special function facing investors with one way of looking at returns. Let me get a call from Spokane, Washington. Michael's on the line. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, this is a good segue because my question is, I'm a financial analyst.
Okay.
And one of the questions that I've always had is, given the strong presence in the local markets that these newspapers have, why have they been so inept at monetizing that? For example, there's a service called Craigslist that has local classified ads for pretty much everything.
But pretty much free, too.
Well, pretty much free, but there's a model where they generate revenue. Why can't newspapers do that?
Compete with Craigslist locally on classified ads that are almost free. Bill Kovich, could papers have taken on Craigslist, which started out young people and now all kinds of people use to find almost everything they used to find in newspaper classifieds? Was there a missed opportunity there, Bill?
Yeah, of course. And they're always looking for ways to deal with this. Now, I think the best news organizations have overcome their panic and are beginning to do important new things to compete in this new atmosphere and to demonstrate that they can do everything that their competitors online can do. The Committee of Concerned Journalists and its partners, research partners at the University of Missouri, are working with a number of news organizations around the country now in trying to create new ways to carry their values onto their internet website and become the aggregator of audience built around their expertise and their deep well of content that helps people make decisions about their lives.
Mm-hmm.
The role that journalism has always played, the only role that has justified its First Amendment protection in the United States. They're trying to figure out a way to do that online, and I believe the more creative thinkers are doing that. The Tribune Company had an interesting and a forward-looking notion to begin with, trying to find synergy between their television holdings and their newspaper holdings.
Mm-hmm.
They were ahead of the curve, and they couldn't convince the newsrooms, either in the television station or in the newspaper, that they had to combine themselves and think of the internet first, and how their information was distributed was not important.
Let me get a call from Hilton Head, South Carolina. Pamela's on the line. Hi, Pamela.
I work at a newspaper here. It's a really small local newspaper, but we just built a brand new press, very expensive, like $1 million press.
Good for you. What's your circulation? Pamela? How many papers do you sell?
About 22,000.
Okay, so small, but business is good?
Yeah, well, because it's a nice area, and a lot of people are retiring here, so we're kind of fortunate that we have like an older population that we cater to. But it is very nerve-wracking, too. We're very much, like, on the web and trying to be as technologically updated as we can. But you know, it's kind of I work in I'm a copy editor at the paper. So, but it's kind of daunting with, all like, a lot of layoffs at other papers. But we seem to be doing good.
You may be in a great spot in the country, Pamela. You've got a big population of retirees there who may stick with papers for a long time. But, of course, there are many smaller local papers who are still doing pretty well. And we're glad for the story of how you're making out there. Thanks for calling. Let me get a call from Medford, Massachusetts. And John, hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
It's interesting. One of your guests said that newspapers' product is not profits for investors, but is instead good reporting for readers. And no one mentioned it, but I think that points to a crux of the whole problem. There's a struggle happening in newsrooms right now, exemplified by the editors John Carroll and then Dean Baquette.
You're talking about the LA Times crew that's gone from the LA Times.
They're top editors. They're the top of the news staff, the top of the reporters' structure. They left. They resigned, resisting cost-cutting. John Carroll's now teaching at the Kennedy School. Question is, where are the reporters' and news staff's unions? Reporters are subject to the owner's whims, like the rest of American working people. If someone could talk about, please, the differences between the differences in financial interest between the reporters and news staff of newspapers and the owner investors of the newspapers, and isn't part of the problem that news staffers are not organized to deal with this problem, like in every other American industry, it's not a new story.
We've heard noises of pushing back in Philadelphia and elsewhere, but Ellen, what do you say to John?
Well, the Post-Dispatch has a guild newsroom and also unionized advertising division and some other divisions there. And the guild really doesn't have any say in it. They can't go to the owners, which the ownership changed about a year and a half ago, and say, here are the profit levels that you have to make, or you have to can't cut here. The unions can only control, to some extent, not control it, but determine some of the rules for how cutbacks are made. But they don't have a right to tell the owners how much profit that they make or where they spend their money.
But Bill Kovich, what about the struggle under the covers that breaks out in the public pretty often lately? Our caller points to what we saw at the LA Times. High drama there, and that's not the only newsroom where this tension has been acute. I mean, are readers still getting what history has trained them to expect from newspapers, or are these things being kind of gutted in front of their eyes with newsrooms maybe resisting but not succeeding in hanging on to the resources they need to do the job?
Well, I think if you look at the numbers, several thousands, maybe 7,000 jobs that have been eliminated at newspaper newsrooms around the country in the last couple of years, the well of verified, independently produced information is shrinking. And the only hope for that shrinkage to slow down, stop, maybe even reverse over the next decade is, as Zachary suggested, a better long-term strategy on the part of the owners of the newspapers that exist that can convince not just the market, but the readership in their community, either online or in print, that they have a sense of their importance, the importance of their information, and how it's going to keep them alive economically. And there are ways to do it. They just have to think of the survival in the internet first and getting the content there in the most effective way.
Bill, but this problem, crisis, call it what you will, panic, didn't happen overnight. It was a lot of years in coming, and that strategy has not emerged yet. I mean, it seems possible that we may lose what we historically understood as the rudder of the news business. If that happens, can you foresee a different kind of relationship between this democracy and its the way it understands the world around it?
Absolutely. The thing that concerns me most is that this common body of information that a quality, independent, verified journalism provides, if it does not sufficiently, it doesn't survive to continue to examine the breadth and depth of our country, the breadth and depth of the experience and thought of our diverse country, and produce that on a regular basis to help us arrive at the compromises that make democracy possible. If that stream of information becomes more diluted and begins to disappear, the possibilities for self-governing democracy diminish and the probability of a ruling oligarchy running the country increases.
Zachary Carabell, can you take off your finance hat and put on your citizen hat for a minute here? Do you fear that? Do you see it on the way?
I've learned a lot from Bill Kovich over the years, and I absolutely agree with the sentiment. I don't agree that those needs have to be met through the traditional media companies that we're currently talking about in crisis. I mean, much of the 19th century into the early 20th was a period of some really messy mix of yellow journalism, families like the McCormicks, you know, owning papers that they tried to dictate the entire editorial approach of, but a really strong populist need for information and analysis. And I think that that need is beginning to exhibit itself on the web. I mean, whether it's things like some of the more popular content-generating websites like the Huffington Post beginning to build editorial staffs, whether it's local papers sort of surviving in the interstices between these issues, or whether it is, in fact, publicly traded newspaper companies going private, which is part of what's going on with the Tribune, meaning it's not as if these things are unviable businesses. They just may be unviable businesses in the public equity market.
So there we are, the future in the balance. Ellen Soderbergh, we just got a few seconds left here. Where's your optimism or pessimism stand as we speak today? You're right out of that newspaper business.
I'm optimistic about the future of small community papers like the Hilton Head Packet that Pamela called from, because there's nobody else really providing that kind of information. I'm optimistic about the survival of the handful of national papers. I'm very worried about the Metro papers in their something for everybody format that we've always relied on.
And that's a big chunk of our news history. We're out of time. Ellen Soderbergh, a former editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Zachary Kallerbal in New York, thank you for joining us. From Fred Alger Management, and Bill Kovich at the Committee of Concerned Journalists, thanks very much for being with us, Bill.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.